AM Seattle, KIRO FM HD2 Tacoma, streaming live on the 710 Sports app.
You ready to answer?
The voice of Seattle sports.
No doubt about it.
710 ESPN Seattle. Seattle Sports Snapshot. The Mariners continue their extra innings heroics with a 42 win in Baltimore.
Line drive into right center field. Base hit. D hits the bag at second. It's picked up by Jones in right center. He bobbles it. Here comes D Gordon. He is flying around third base. Hand on top of his helmet. He slides across the dish. He is safe.
After sweeping the Orioles, the Mariners look to extend their four-game win streak today at 7 against the Royals. It's the first game of a 9-game homestand. The final one before the All-Star break. MLB Network's John Morosi is reporting that the Mariners have had trade discussions with the Rangers involving ace pitcher Cole Hamels. GM Jerry DePoto joined Danny, Dave, and Moore yesterday.
If we have the ability to add depth in our pitching staff or even spread out our rotation, we're not particularly looking to replace anybody. If we have the chance to go out and augment it, we will.
Snapshot, brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light, Washington's most refreshing beer.
This is Danny, Dave, and Moore.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Now, the opening drive.
The Mariners are back in town. I'm back in town. Seattle, 20 games above 500, and we're here at Edgar's Cantina getting ready to watch the Mariners take on the Kansas City Royals as they open a huge homestand after going 5-5 through what was a very difficult run on the road for the Seattle Mariners.
Yeah, and they're starting a 10-day, 9-game homestand here. We got the Angels coming here as well, and this is going to be really interesting to see how they react, especially this first game. Long road trip, as you mentioned, but man, they were so happy after that game yesterday. We got a chance, Danny, to talk to Jerry DePoto, and he couldn't have been in a better mood. So, and you said this, Danny, in your email, that you would take that. Was it
5-5 on the road?
5 on the road? I mean,
sign me up for that every bit. Start going on the road trip. You say you go 5-5 over these 10 games? Absolutely, I'll take it.
Doesn't matter where the wins came? Because I asked Mikey and Stevie about that last night. We were on the way home from one of their games that they were playing. Did it matter that the four games against Baltimore, would you rather had them go 5-5 by winning 2 of 3 in New York, 1 of 3 in Boston, and split with Baltimore? And they said, hey, Dad, we'll take the split in Baltimore. It mattered more. I think it would have been, I'm microanalyzing things because in the big picture, I like the 5-5. But yeah, you would have liked to have seen them be a little more competitive in those two series in New York and Boston.
Of course you would.
Yeah.
Absolutely, you would have liked it. Given what happened, though, if you come back and win 4 in a row in Baltimore, it makes up for it. It's a wash. There's not a special category for where these wins count, and you don't get 1.2 victories in the standings for beating the Yankees or for beating the Red Sox. And they dug themselves a little bit of a hole to start that road trip. A big hole getting swept in New York. And they come back home, having gone 5-5, and the way that they won yesterday's game, in fact, the way that they won the last couple games in that series against Baltimore, coming back, the excitement. D. Gordon, first, let's stop and acknowledge the chin strap, which is the single best uniform alteration that's been made. I've been a big fan of the Mitch Haniger cheek protector, like how that's kind of become pretty fat. A lot of the hitters are using it. But the chin strap on the helmet was absolutely fantastic. That's going to save. You talk about shortening the game. The ability to not have to go and fetch his hat every time he runs, and he runs an awful lot, that's going to shave at least 90 seconds off per game.
Yeah, there was umpires and opposing players having to jump out of the way of his hat, so he fixed the problem. I think Root Sports has learned to just train the camera, have a D. Gordon camera pretty much the whole time, because all the stuff, when we talked to DePoto about this, what he means to this team, it's so much more than his stats, which his stats are good. You know, what, 21, 22, I think he's up around 300 career stolen bases now. And now, you know, you look at what he's brought to this team, and it's all that stuff, I think, in the dugout that really helps them and kind of sets the tone.
Like when he exposes his nipples?
Yeah, I'm not sure what that was about.
It had something to do with his dad, I think, an interview he did.
Well, that doesn't
MLB
make it less
Network,
strange.
Where there was a picture of his dad with his shirt off. And so, yeah, I mean, he was just goofing around, though.
And then laying down after he went running around the bases because he'd winded. At what point did you guys think he was going to score? Like, at what point?
Well, as soon as I heard Goldsmith say that Rasmus bobbled ball. Yeah.
Yeah, and Rasmus, good player. Now, I think it was his first start in center field, but still, it was just grounding a ball.
Rasmus is the one that looks like he has rickets, right? Like he's unnaturally skinny. Like it seems...
he's not Chris Sale skinny.
Well, he's got the sunken eyes. Like when you look out there, you're like, I saw gas station attendants in Klamath Falls that look like that.
He also had the Amish beard a couple years ago. Looked like Brother Philemon out there. Looked like he was going to do a barn raising.
Well, there's a big difference between an Amish person and a crackhead, because that's what I think he looks like. It's like, yeah, go back home to your trailer.
Yeah, don't forget the Mariners are back in town tonight with a 9-game homestand. Tomorrow's turn ahead.
It's not
the
very
clock
nice,
night.
Is it?
No, Tuesday it's Patreon.
I'm not
fireworks
nice.
Night.
I'm not a nice person, John.
July 4th is the Stars and Stripes Cowboy Hat Day. All week long, we've been giving you opportunities to win Mariners tickets. And today, if you want to try to win this hour's tickets, you're going to need to remember the code word. It's Shannon. What is it, Jim?
Shannon's a code word?
Shannon is the code word.
No way.
Yeah, remember that word and keep listening to our show for your chance to win. I'll be giving you that code word here sometime in the first
Shannon,
hour.
Shannon, how come it's not Jim?
Well, I don't know. That's what I'm gonna
ask. It should be morons.
the morons would be good. Shannon's going to be here at 5:30.
We are going to talk to her. We're also going to talk to Mike Leake, who's going to be joining us here shortly at Edgar's Cantina. I thought, as soon as I saw the way Gordon was running and where the ball was hit, I was like, I wonder if D's going to find his way home. Like, seeing that game, and I'm sitting there following it in the airport and watching it, wondering if he was going to, and then once he bobbled it, you knew it was. I love watching a fast player. We've said this before, it's a skill or a trait that's kind of gone out of style in baseball. In the 80s, you had all sorts of players who were that D. Gordon mold of disruptive on the bases, able to be and run the bases aggressively, and in large part because we've learned more about how expensive an out is on the base paths. Like how expensive and costly it caught stealing. And I mean, even Ricky Henderson, when he's stealing 100 bases, he's getting caught 40 times in some seasons. Like, you have to be really good to take those kind of chances. He is really good, and the impact that he's made is incredible.
Well, a great bunter, too. The only thing he really doesn't have, I guess, is power. Does he have one home run?
One, which was a game winner, right?
Yeah.
He does not often hit home runs.
Who cares?
But when he does, they're game winning.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, he's just so much more. And I think Jerry DePoto agreed that what he brings to the team and just the enthusiasm. And I think it's a huge reason why they've won a lot of these one-run games now. What are they up to?
Yeah, the 25-11 in one-run games, 8-0 in extra innings. And we thought that when they went to extra innings yesterday, when they had the top of the lineup coming up, that it was going to be tough for Baltimore to hold them off. And sure enough, they came through with another win. And you look, I still can't believe, and you start at this point, though, halfway through the season, starting the second half of the season, that this run differential might hold up. They're only plus 14, and they're 20 games over 500. And then you look at the Astros at plus 174, but just have a 3.5 game lead.
What are the three things you brought up to Jerry DePoto? What's the most sustainable?
And he said, well, he basically said that these things have happened, so they've already happened, so they...
Doesn't matter.
It was something like that, right?
Right.
Yeah.
What were the other ones? You had run differential...
8-0 in extra innings, and then 25-11 in one-run games.
Right. Well, it's just the personality of this team, apparently, and I think it's a lot of it's because guys like D. Gordon. So the other person, too, is Nelson Cruz, and just we talked to him about his compact swing. Now, there's a guy that's not fast on the base paths. He's always... You know, kind of a little bit beat up, and he had a back problem, and comes in and gets three RBIs in the game, including a home run.
The fact that he's heated up, and then you've seen Seager have a couple really good games, and then DePoto told you guys yesterday that Seager's been dealing with a little bit of a toe issue. What is an avulsion fracture?
Avulsion.
Yeah.
It's a new one on me.
Which I believe is when the ligament pulls off a little chunk of the bone.
Is that right?
If I'm not,
it couldn't have been too bad, though, because he came in the game.
He did.
Yesterday.
But it sounds like it's one of those things that's similar to what D. Gordon was dealing with, except it's a little bit more important on D. Gordon because D's speed is such a huge part of his game.
Did you hear yesterday when he made that joke that that's not really a factor for Kyle? And then he kind of laughed at his own joke.
He said,
Jerry did.
Fortunately, Kyle's not, speed is not a big part of his game.
Right.
Yeah, the Jerry chuckles are funny. He gets a kick out of himself sometimes. Yeah. I guess we all do, and I like that about him. When you were in Mexico, did you happen to notice what Kyle Seager was doing?
Yeah, I did.
Did
I
you? All three runs batted in that one game, 3-2, and then the game-tying homer, and they went on to win an extra inning.
Single-handedly innings. Bringing him back.
Yeah, what were you saying about Kyle Seager?
I was saying that's about time that he's been able to do that, and that if he gets hot, he can carry him for an extended period.
And there he is.
Absolutely.
He's off and running.
The way this team has won, and that question of whether or not it's sustainable, I think of all the different things they have going for them, their record in one-run games is the most sort of skill-based. I don't think the run differential thing is fluky and weird right now, and I think you have to hope that they get better in that regard, and there's reasons to think that they will. Their record in one-run games is reflective of the closer that they have and the way that their hitters approach and what they do late in games. That it's not just fluky that their hitters are successful, and I think a part of it is you got some good fastball hitters in a time when everybody's emphasizing velocity out of the bullpen, and the Mariners, in a time where bullpenning has become a verb, like the Mariners are actually pretty well equipped to hit teams that bring in hard throwers.
Yeah, it's just, and also it becomes a habit. You know, after you do that enough times, you all of a sudden just expect it. And I always compare to this as far as, you know, momentum goes, is that once you do something like that, you kind of put it in your back pocket. Like, it's like a recipe that you can follow. You bottle it up. It's like, okay, we got this. We know we've been here before, and we know what to do to get out of it. But, and then, you know, maybe it's a little bit of stepping up and the opposite of choking, Danny. You know, guys that hit in high-pressure situations, you know, a little bit of that. But it just comes from confidence of having done it. The other thing is, I just think the spirit of the team and what's going on with D. Gordon, and, you know, as far as him getting the whole dugout, high-fiving and all the stuff that's going on, it's like the most active dugout of anybody in MLB. You don't see that anywhere else on any other team.
If D. Gordon would start to get everybody to pick up the litter, Jim couldn't be more thrilled, right? That's the next thing you got to get.
Yeah, that's the next thing. You know, my biggest concern, though, Dave and Danny, is whether ownership will step up and spend the necessary money to get this team over the hump and be able to battle with the Astros and the Yankees and the Red Sox, because the Mariners are in a good position. But in order for them to be great and truly become a player in the postseason, ownership really needs to step up.
It's really interesting because the owner's right here. And do you feel Jim's hand reaching into your pocket? Because I would keep a real firm grip on that.
Oh, there it is,
Mr.
There's
Sand.
His wallet. No,
I would
look
not,
at that.
I would not be.
Look, don't open it. Jeez.
He's got ones.
You should
in
know
there.
Better than that, John.
As promised, right now the first caller at 206-421-3776. The first one.
he's got the Ben Franklins in a different.
The large bills were in a different pocket in there. The first person who can give us this hour's code word will win two tickets to the July 4th Mariners game when the Mariners host the Angels and the first 20,000 fans take home a patriotic cowboy hat. Find great seats at Mariners.com. We've got Mike Leake. He's going to be joining us here in the bullpen next. Kyle Seager back in the field tonight after getting part of last night off, yesterday off in Baltimore. Seager's back at third base today, batting fifth. No real surprises there. You've got Span in left field, Zunino catching, Heredia in center, and the lineup that we've come to see and recognize of D. Gordon leading off, Gene Segura, Mitch Haniger, Cruz, Seager, Healy, then Span, Zunino, and Heredia. And one of the things that came out yesterday, Jerry DiPoto for the first time mentioned this, and it's not front of mind yet, but it's something you need to keep in the back of your mind, that there are going to be some innings considerations with the pitchers. Now, this would fall in the category of luxury problems. In the beginning of the season, we were worried how much weight the starters would be able to carry. And now we're worried that some of them, specifically Marco Gonzalez, might be carrying too much. We get to start talking about when and who the Mariners might add when it comes to the starting rotation.
Danny, I was looking at it, though. When you look at Marco Gonzalez, and I thought, okay, I think that is the one specifically that Jerry DiPoto's a little concerned about. He's at 91 innings right now and pitching tonight. But when you look at how he pitched last year for St. Louis and then also for Memphis, you combine them, and he was up to 160-something. So I think they're going to be okay there. But, yeah, he just, as he said yesterday, he just wants to add to that rotation, have some options, because – who knows if Wade LeBlanc, as good as he's been, he's a 31-year-old guy who's bounced around. And so when we always sit here and talk about different things being sustainable, right, seriously, do you think Wade LeBlanc is sustainable till the end of the year? I don't.
I don't see a reason why
he would be. I hope he is.
Why wouldn't it? Why are you expecting
him to turn
into a pumpkin?
Why all of a sudden at the age of 31 would he just like, you know, I was in Seattle and I was working with this Stottlemyre guy and I just I found the fountain of youth and I turned into Jamie Moyer. And it's a nice fairy tale and I hope it works out. I do. But it's nice to have some insurance. Like if you bring Cole Hamels or whoever, you know, a long reliever type, maybe Iwakuma will suddenly appear from the long tossing and be out on the mound eventually. Maybe Erasmo
Ramirez. I don't want to count on Iwakuma for a second. If he comes, he's the bonus. He's the $20 bill you find in your old pair of pants. Apparently, I'm obsessed with this metaphor of finding.
Yeah, because who else did you use that? Oh, use that on LeBlanc.
Yeah, LeBlanc was the $20 bill.
So, what's LeBlanc? Is he only 10 or is he 20?
No. LeBlanc right now he's moving toward one of those Ben Franklins you found in John Stanton's wallet.
He had a lot of them. I know. I thought he only had ones. I opened it up, there were only ones. He's not going to get Cole Hamels with ones. He's not.
Was that a surprise to you that a multi-billionaire might have some $100 bills in his pocket?
It was a surprise to me that Jim would
to
open
see the
his
ones.
Wallet.
Yeah, you started rifling
ones.
Through his personal
Jim
stuff there.
Opened the wallet.
Yeah, I did. He didn't seem to mind. Well, I just bought some golf clubs today, and I could use some of that money, actually.
He got a little bit nervous. He reached over and was like, oh, hold on, I was joking. Jim was like, no, I wasn't joking. Jim asked Jerry DePoto to go get Blake Snell yesterday, by the way.
Oh, the Edmonds product, right? You come from Shoreline?
Yeah.
From Shoreline? You do that?
I'm not sure if he has his license yet. If you look at his picture, he can't drive, but he's 6'5", and what is it? He's 2'3", 1". He's... what, 7-0 or 8-0, something like that. But, yeah, the thing about LeBlanc, though, you said he found the fountain of youth here. That's not really what happened with him, right? It was more like the other side of it, like his experience, because he's not going to throw more than 86 miles per hour. And you mentioned this, Danny, that him and I guess Elite kind of falls into that same category. It's not like you worry about them throwing their arms out, right?
Exactly.
So... yeah, I don't know why it's not sustainable. I mean, that's a pretty lofty comparison and a lot of pressure for Wade LeBlanc comparing him to Jamie Moyer. But, yeah, I mean, it's the same thing as the one-run game. I mean, is it sustainable? Well, I don't know, but it's working. So maybe we just enjoy the ride.
That contingency plan, I think it's good to have a contingency plan because out of your five starters, you still don't have much depth behind him. And the chances of one of those guys getting hurt or having their effectiveness decline, or Felix not being able to sustain this past month that we've seen from him, you're going to need to go out and get some contingency. And you've played yourself into a position to get starting pitching depth. And I think the question you're going to have, is it going to be a high-salary guy like Cole Hamels, where what you're primarily giving up to get him is money? Or is it, if it was somebody like Blake Snell is probably tougher, or Chris Archer from Tampa Bay, like one
yeah,
of
he laughed off Snell, basically.
Well, Snell is really valuable. I mean, Snell right now is, you would have to give up a significant amount because he's cheap and he's good and he's probably going to get better. I mean, that's the ability to get him. Like, you would have to give up a ton in your farm system to convince Tampa Bay to give up.
Yeah, I was just kind of throwing that out there, especially local kid and how Jerry always trades with Tampa Bay and those types of things.
It's not that he wouldn't be gettable. It's just you'd have to give up so much. Whereas Cole Hamels, like you wouldn't have to give up a top minor league prospect to get him. You'd just have to take on some
salary. I think
he's
in the last year of his contract.
There's an option after this year. You'd have to pay $6 million to nullify his contract and pay the remaining half of this year, which is probably about $11
million. Well, and Jerry's quote was, I'm pretty sure he's not available. Well, he pitches for Tampa Bay, and I think Jerry pretty much knows the ins and outs of the Tampa Bay ball club.
He's well acquainted with who the Rays are and aren't making available. It is Danny David Moore. We're going to have Mike Leake. He's going to join us coming up next from the Cantina.
This is Danny David Moore.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
Danny David Moore. We're here at Edgar's Cantina like we are each and every Friday before a home game. Our coverage here is brought to you by Seoul and Greg's Japanese Auto, which is really fun. We're going to have Mike Leake, who's going to come down here and join us. The Mariners return 5-5 after a 10-game road trip. What you've been able to see from them and what they've been able to do is absolutely... they didn't get knocked off balance when they suffered a sweep at the hands of the Yankees and lost 2-3 to Boston. And I think, Jim, when you ask that question of is 5-5 a successful road trip, You feel good when you go 5-5. You go 500 on the road. Like, you feel pretty good about what they're doing and how they're playing. But the fact that they don't get knocked off balance, that they're able to recover after losing those games, I think is what is most important to me. You'd have preferred they win a couple games against the Yankees and split with the Orioles as opposed to winning four against the Orioles and having just one between the Red Sox and Yankees. But they suffered those losses and they rebounded.
Well, and the other part of it is that you get another shot at the Yankees here. Now, you did well when the Red Sox were here. You split that series 2-2. And so, yeah, okay, you lost 2-3 at Fenway Park. You got swept at New York, but you do have another chance to face the Yankees again. And then there's countless games against the Astros, too. So one of the things that DePoto told us yesterday that I thought was really interesting, well, one was talking about Robinson Cano when we were trying to figure out a most valuable player who's been the most important person to the Mariners' success, whether it's Service, DePoto, or one of the players. And Robinson Cano was brought up by one of the listeners and Jerry DePoto, too, with just because his absence caused the team to galvanize even further than they already were. But the other thing that he said was, DePoto, when we asked him about the Astros, is there still a chance you could catch them? They're 3.5 out right now. And he said, sometimes the best team doesn't always win. So maybe that'll be the Mariners this year. Maybe it'll be that mojo magic type stuff that we're talking about, the pixie dust and all those things. And maybe this will be a team that collectively will be better than those individual stars that Houston has.
I have a hard time believing in the addition by subtraction when it comes to Robinson Cano.
Well, short term, I always buy into that because players always rally the troops.
Yeah. Well, and
but
they didn't right
been,
away.
It's bordering on long term now, though.
Remember, it was like they lost, I think, their first three games after that suspension. And, you know, I think somewhere after that is when D. Gordon was out for 10 games. So it was, yeah, I have a hard time with that one. And that the other thing is, I think with Robinson Cano, you win a couple of those games, he's built for that 316 in right field and Yankee Stadium and, you know, some of the, I don't know. I just, to me, that one's a tough one.
You know, Gordon scored on that hit to center yesterday that was bobbled by Rasmus.
Uh-huh.
You think Robbie would have made it to third?
Yeah, maybe, right? Yeah, that's a good point. But, you know, I don't know. And, you know, the other thing and not to not feel bad about is look at home. Those are the two best teams in the AL. As far as home records go, 28-12 in Boston and 29-11 with the Yankees. But the one that got away was the one where Nelson Cruz hit the light tower, you know, and they scored 10 runs. He had 7 RBIs in that game. They ended up losing 14-10. That was the heartbreaker.
Well, you had two games where they blew. Of those losses they suffered, two of the losses they suffered, they had 5-run leads, right? Two of the losses, the
yes.
5-run lead, they were mm-hmm. up 5-0 against the Yankees in the game, if you look, that started. And then that game, was it just a 4-run lead they had?
Because 4-0, and then 10-5.
And then 10-5. They had mm-hmm. another 5-run lead in that game. That idea that you rally when your best players lost, there was a theory that was, it was the Bill Simmons called it the Patrick Ewing theory. Because there was a year that Ewing got hurt, and when he went out, the Knicks became a better team without him. And kind of this question of, like, when you have that sort of vacancy that's created, that sometimes what comes after that and what happens, because I tend to agree with you, Dave. Like, you don't get better by losing your best player.
Well, and Jim, you made that argument the year that Jimmy Graham got hurt. Remember with the Seahawks? Because they went on a tear after that.
That's probably one of the better.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that, but you're right. Because that was
Wilson and Baldwin?
Yeah, the most successful passing run that they've had came in those 6-7 games. It kind of started before Jimmy Graham was hurt, but his injury not only did it not set him back, that they really continued to take off.
Average 30 a game?
Huh?
They averaged 30 points a game.
Yeah, and Russell was like 85% from the pocket or something like that. So, yeah, but still, I just feel like, man, if he's there, maybe there's a certain chemistry thing that happens. I know with Jimmy Graham, with that argument, I thought there was a lot of force in the ball into him. And so, you know, instead of just trying to find the open guy, and Doug Baldwin, as we know, is always open. But, you know, with Cano, man, yeah, he's just so smooth and so good, but yeah, the chemistry thing is kind of delicate and kind of a weird thing. So, and I know, who was it? Maybe it was Taylor Jacobs that was bringing up that do you even bring back Cano, you know, because of the way it's working right now. But he's so good. I mean, I don't see how you cannot have him come back, move D back out to center field. But again, he's not going to be available for the playoffs. to make it.
Yeah, then you look at the outfield situation, too. We were talking to DePoto yesterday and how Scott Servais has handled Ben Gamel and Denard Span. You got two left-handed hitters playing the same position, and yet somehow I figured that the success of one player would come at the expense of another, and it hasn't. It's like, I don't know how Servais does it on who he picks. Now, who's in the lineup tonight? I think Span. Span's playing tonight.
And then you've got
Heredia. But if you're Ben Gamel, you're sitting there going, well, wait a minute. I just had three hits in the last game, and I'm on the bench tonight. And yet, Servais seems to be making the right moves there.
Do we keep wondering, has Heredia hit a wall at center? And as an everyday player.
So. What's he down to, 230 or something?
He's struggling to play, but he's had some success. Certainly he's a defensive asset in center field the way he plays. I'm really pleasantly surprised by the way Gamel has improved, because at the time they acquired Span, I would have said that I thought that what we'd seen from Ben Gamel, I didn't know if he was going to be an everyday outfielder and capable of doing that. It's very clear he is. And right now the question would be, like, how long do you keep balancing there? They've had a couple games where they put Haniger in center. That you're closer to having an everyday outfield that includes Span and Gamel than I ever thought you would be when they acquired him. And it's also quickly becoming the Denard Span trade. Like, yeah. I thought Colome was the real acquisition there, and he might turn out to be. You certainly hope that he's...
Did you see that Chris Davis home run? Oh, man. Mammoth.
He turned that one around.
Yeah. Sims was speechless.
Yeah,
there wasn't much to say after that one.
Yeah, that was there.
Well, good for Chris Davis. That's like his sixth home run. He should have like 20 by now. Punk. I wouldn't mess with him, though. That's a big dude right there.
You don't think you could take him?
No. Oh. No, no. But, you know, you mentioned, is Gamel like the most underappreciated guy? Because he had a horrible start. It was not good in April, but since May 1st, he's batting .330. He's got seven doubles, all kinds of good defense. So
yeah.
There's a lot of, you know, and then the other guy I'd mentioned, Mitch Haniger, maybe another kind of sneaky, really good player. You know, it's not like he's super flashy, but, man, he just does it so consistently. And his, you know, his throwing arm, it never looks like it's that hard of a throw. Same thing when he runs, but, man, it gets there in a hurry. So get a lot of different pieces stepping up right now. But you're right, Heredia has kind of been absent a little bit.
And that was after the suspension to Cano. That was one of the first things we thought was, okay, Heredia's going to get an opportunity to be an everyday player. Can he do it? Is he going to be able to successfully hit? Right. We're starting to see some evidence that, maybe that's not in the cards for him. Maybe his ultimate role is to be that fourth outfielder.
I hope not.
And if so, you play. I love the way Heredia plays.
I do, too. Yeah. I just really pulling for him. But what's he hitting now, Danny? I mean, he was right around 300 there for a while.
He's 237 right now. And, you know, he had a couple of hits yesterday, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, prior to that, 1-2 here, but he went on a huge, like, 9-game hitless streak.
Yeah, the challenge there is if you did decide, can you play Span and Gamel? Can one of those guys play center field for you? Span obviously did earlier in his career. Is that what you would want as an everyday lineup? Because you're going to be conceding something there defensively and in terms of the range. At the same time, you've got the luxury right now because you do have Gamel and Span who are both hitting that you can kind of play around with some configurations. It's a really interchangeable lineup. And that's one of the things that I'm struck by. There are some things that Jerry DePoto has done that haven't worked. The attempts to get guys, pitchers with high fly ball rates to come in here. That really didn't work. And I would say in part that's because the ball changed and you have more home runs in the game now. But there's some other things that he's done that have really worked. Getting more athletic outfielders, like that's what we see. That's what we see in Haniger. That's what we see in Heredia. There's certainly Gamel and adding Span, who is more of a veteran and maybe doesn't have the range he once did. But they've gotten a lot of really interchangeable players that have made this lineup and made this team one where they've been able to adjust to losing what we would have said is their best hitter in Robinson Cano, to the point where you can actually have a discussion of like, oh, I'm not sure how you fit him in when he comes back. He, like, make no mistake, he fits in. He's got too good a bat for you not to make him part of it. But it's the team that they put together is very flexible.
Yeah, well, you think about it, and I hardly ever do, but if I did, does that make sense?
You hardly ever think?
Yeah, but since I'm thinking about it,
when
right,
you think about it, which I hardly ever do.
Well, I don't, because it just occurred to me. that run prevention, Danny, is equally important to run production, Dave. How's that? Because, I mean, honestly, you sit there and you go, okay, for all the great plays these guys make in the outfield, how about the throw that Gamble made? Was it yesterday? I forget. I mean, the throw needed to be perfect to beat the guy trying to get the second, and it was, and he got him. So, I mean, all those different things, you don't really need the big home run hitters out there, although you're getting that. You get the run production and the run prevention with Mitch Haniger, though. I mean, you get the best of both worlds with him because you know Danny, he's a five-tool player.
Yeah, he's you very toolsy. Right? Yeah.
Sounds like you're
sounds cool to say someone's a five-tool player, Dave.
Yeah, it does sound cool. Yeah. You like to refer to people who are in musicals as five-tool players.
They are five-tool players. Yeah.
Well, it's really just three because it's dancing, singing, and acting. Yeah. Right? I don't know if there are five tools that would be there. The five tools that are there is when you have five of the musical actors on stage at the same time. You're like, hey, you see those five tools? They're about to break out into a coordinated song and dance.
No, but when you talk about the versatility, what do they do with D. Gordon when Robbie does come back? And I know it's a month and a half away, but it's a good problem to have because you put Gordon out there center field a little bit. You timeshare him with, like DePoto was saying, with Cano at second. Do you have a little bit of a timeshare with Cano and Healy at first? If Healy maybe struggles a little bit, say in July sometime, it's you got that option. Do you DH? You have a platoon DH with Cruz if he falls off a little bit. There's some options there.
Yeah, I would have said that the DH platoon with Cruz, that was a consideration 3 weeks ago, not the way he's hitting since then. It's a good thing that Kyle Seager all of a sudden started carrying some serious weight in Baltimore because I was going to start advocating to move Healy over to third and play Robbie at first.
That's not a bad idea.
That's a terrible idea.
Well, no, it's an option.
Yeah, it is there.
Because Healy's got experience there.
He does, but he's not a good defensive third baseman.
Well, how do you think Robbie would be at first base? Do we just assume that he's going to be good over there?
Yeah.
Do we?
I can
see Robbie just blowing bubbles, sunflower seeds, and trying to pick a ball.
Is there anything you think that Robinson Cano can't do on the baseball field?
Run to first.
How about keep track of balls and strikes and who's on base?
Okay.
You set me up on that one. Yeah. That was an easy answer.
Hustle and
you see, he applauded Machado the other day when Machado didn't run out the double play. Machado, with the bases loaded, he hit a ball to short, I think it was. And
he was frustrated.
Fans were booing him. And,
he didn't really
enjoy it. Not a good look.
Can you believe, though, with the athlete, you talk about the athletic ability in the outfield that we were talking about Cruz last year playing out in right field? There's no chance of that happening. The other thing I reflect back to is when DePoto first came in here, remember he said, we want speed in the outfield, as you said, and then build a conga line on the bases. And then you bring in D. Gordon and... this is exactly what he was trying to get done. It's all come to fruition for him.
Yeah, it wasn't that long ago we were watching Mark Trumbull play the outfield. Do you remember that? Or Ricky Weeks. Was he the infielder that we saw? It's the only...
Ricky Weeks out in left field?
I don't think I've ever at another time seen an outfielder throw the ball in and spike the ball into the grass. Like where he just held on to the ball too long, and I was just like, what?
Well, there was some indecision there.
Yeah.
I think he was trying to pull it back.
Trying to hold on to it?
Yeah.
And
he didn't have a great arm.
No, and he never really played, and I guess outfield defense does matter if you're going to put these sort of butchers out there.
Well, that's one of those things that you can't really imagine until you see it, because I just remember making the case for Cruz playing out in right field. Like, he's fine. He'll be okay.
He always
see what you get.
Well, I was concerned about how it might affect him in the batter's box. Because I don't think it's just a seamless transition to go from playing in the field to being in the dugout and all the different things that you got to go through to stay warm and stay loose. And so he was against that at first, but you never hear about that anymore.
2 years ago, I mean, there was a significant statistical difference. After his first year here in town, significant difference between when he played in the field and when he DH'd, that it did affect his hitting, that he was a better hitter when he played in the field. And I was always the give me the bat. Like, if you have to give up something in the field to get him to produce at that level and get a 40 home run hitter, you concede it and you don't think twice about it. The fact that he has remained that consistent of a hitter, and kind of quietly without any announcement, it was last season where all of a sudden he just wasn't playing in the field, ever.
We were talking about it earlier this week, and I was I kind of asked DePoto a question about it yesterday, as if he was going to give us a scoop and say, we've been thinking about it, Jim, and we're going to give Nelson Cruz an extension tomorrow. We didn't get that. Typically, they're going to talk about it at the end of the year, but Shannon was talking about it, too, with what do you do with Nelson Cruz? Now, he's going to turn 38 on Sunday. And do you still think, I mean, Earl Thomas, we sit there, and Earl at 30, 31, that's getting a little old for a free safety. What about for a DH, 38? Would you like to see the Mariners offer a two-year extension to Nelson Cruz at the end of the year and hope that he can still be productive at 39 and 40? Or do you let him go and get younger?
Well, two things about that. Number one, I really got a strong feeling from listening to that Wheelhouse podcast that he is they plan on re-signing him because he said he's quite confident that Nelson Cruz can continue to play well until he's 40, into his 40s, he said, early 40s. But his answer yesterday about renewing the contract during the season, he said it's not good for both sides. And he said, you know, neither side really wants that. So, which is, he said it ends up being more of a distraction than anything. And I'm like, really? I believe him. But you would think for Nelson Cruz, it'd be like, oh, no, that'd be sweet. Can we work that out now? But apparently, and it just made it sound to me like they've already talked about it and that both sides agree that we're just going to get this done at the end of the year.
Usually when those sort of things happen, it means that there's a gap in price, but nobody's upset about it. That it's more of a, hey, we'll see what the market says this offseason. And where the Mariners leave it open, if you get a bigger offer, we'll look at revisiting and raising what we're willing to pay him. I think both sides really like the relationship. And when you have a healthy relationship, the open market then, instead of the deal breaker, can kind of bridge the gap. Because the team sees that, okay, somebody else is willing to offer him that. And we want to keep him, and we're gonna match that price. So I think and see in those situations, as opposed to when you get into an unhealthy relationship, where if it's antagonistic between the player and the team, then the next best offer, you don't give the team a chance to match. It's like you had your chance. That's the Steve Hutchinson example. I know that one of the conversations that's shifted and come up, it's Danny David Moore. We're here at Edgar's Cantina. Our coverage each Friday home game is brought to you by Greg's Japanese Auto as well as Seoul. Another of the conversations that's come up is about Seahawks extensions and whether you would extend Frank Clark. I know John Clayton has written that now is the time to do that. I absolutely want them to let Frank Clark play out his deal. I absolutely want to do that. We do have Mike Leake that's going to be joining us. We'll talk to John Clayton about that coming up as we figure out what the Seahawks are going to do. The Mariners returning home for this really important homestand, which should be a blast. They're just returning off the road after going 5-5, sweeping the Baltimore Orioles, which is a blast. And we are joined now by Mike Leake, who's with us. Mike, how are you?
Good. How are you doing?
We really appreciate you joining us today.
I appreciate being here. Thanks for having me.
What's this feel like? You got a team yesterday. We've got D. Gordon putting on a chin protector to keep his helmet from coming off. At one point, he flashed maybe the opposing dugout or the TV cameras at some point. It looks like it's a lot of fun playing on this team.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you have a great group of guys that are around the same age, so that helps. And everybody's not afraid to be themselves, which makes for a good group. And kind of you get to learn each other even more and get closer when guys are like that. And being able to joke around like that during games with the chin strap is a sign of a good team.
Yeah, it's D. Gordon and what he brings to that team. And Mike, what you bring to the team, too. I love watching you pitch. I mean, have you always pitched so fast? Do you feel like when you get in a rhythm that things go better that way?
Yeah. If you get in a rhythm, I mean, you keep the other team on their toes or off their toes or it gets them more involved so that you can kind of get them more angry, I guess, in a way. So either way, I mean, it keeps your defense, yourself, and the other team more involved.
So you look at how many – you had 49 games this year that have been decided by two runs or less. You're 8-0 in extra innings. So keeping it loose and all that stuff, do you think that plays into it? Because we're talking about, like, momentum, confidence, and are you guys to a point where, like, everybody looks around and go, yeah, we got this. We're down a couple runs.
I don't know about that, but we definitely feel like we're in it. We have the makeup of a team that doesn't feel like we're ever down. So, I mean, that helps being able to go day in and day out with the same attitude and not really take the losses too personal, especially when you get swept. So,
we're talking to Mike Leake out here at Edgar's Cantina. For you, what's this transition been like? It's your first full season with the Mariners. I'm sure that the trade last year in some ways has to be jarring. I don't know if anybody outside of professional sports knows what it's like to be uprooted like that. How have you felt about the Mariners and kind of settling here this season?
I feel like it's a home, to be honest. I mean, St. Louis was a fun place to play, a quality place to live. But I feel like this is more of a home than St. Louis was. The guys make it feel somewhat that way as well. So I think just the atmosphere is conducive to special things.
And what's the story again, Mike, at least according to Wikipedia, which occasionally they can be wrong, but you grew up in San Diego, and yet you grew up a Mariners fan.
Yep, I did. Well, my aunt lives up here, so I came and visited her often, and from there I just became a Mariner Moose fan and as well as a Mariner fan. Griffey was on the team. Etrill was coming in. You had Edgar. You had Randy Johnson. You had a pretty elite team at the time.
So have you been able to tell your teammates about what this city can be like when the whole town is talking about the Mariners?
Yeah, I mean, we're already starting to see it. I feel like when we're playing the Angels and when we're playing Boston, you see how it kind of gets more packed. And when you're winning, you see that more often. And it's more fun to play when it's that way. I mean, when you're losing, it's not fun for the fans. It's not fun for the players either.
Do you know what hospital you were born in? Sharp?
I think so.
Sharp, baby.
Yeah, I think I was
also
Sharp.
Born at Sharp Hospital.
Yeah, yeah.
Good people born there. They do a hell of a job there. What's
it
like?
Shout out to
right?
Sharp
exactly.
Hospital.
Well, just look at us. Yeah. What's it like coming right out of college, right? You went right from college into the major leagues. And do you get, like, some heat from the guys that had to ride the buses and eat the peanut butter and jelly sandwiches?
Yeah,
I mean, is it more joking, or did you actually have guys that were sort of, you know, early on in your career, a little bitter about it or whatever?
There were some bitter people at the start.
Yeah.
I don't know what it was, jealousy or just kind of, I don't know. But now it's more of a joke. I mean, it's kind of, they think it's cool that I didn't have to ride buses and do those sorts of things. So I do too.
The other thing I've always, because you're not a huge guy, you got 6 home runs. You got to be pretty proud of that.
I was always taught to swing hard. So if it went over the fence, it went over the fence. And the length in my swing, I guess, produced some whippiness. So
I'm fascinated with Ohtani this year and kind of that question. You and Marco Gonzalez, really good hitting pitchers. Why do you think that hasn't happened in baseball, that you see a dual sort of path prospect?
It's hard on the body. I mean, it wears people's careers down. I mean, unless you're really good and efficient with how you go about the game of baseball. Ohtani seems like he's fairly close to as anybody with it, the way he plays the game. But I wish you'd see it more, honestly. But I think he would bring more fans and kind of bring a popular thing to the game.
Did you hit in, because you had to hit in college when you weren't pitching?
A little bit. I mean, Murph didn't want me getting hurt, right. So I stayed on the bench and pitched, yeah.
Yeah, it's so interesting because, I mean, almost every pitcher that you see, a high-level pitcher, was one of the best hitters on, if he hit in college or certainly on his high school team. And it's always been fascinating to me that is baseball limiting itself in some regards by not taking advantage of potential. But like you said, there's a huge toll that it takes on the body as well.
Yeah, I think if you take it serious in the minors, then you can prep a guy to be ready here. But if you don't take it serious at the start, then it gets squashed right away.
Yeah, you know, I remember Bill Kruger when we were talking to him one time, who's an analyst for Root Sports, former pitcher. He was like, you know, sometimes the pitchers are like put under glass and they're treated so sensitively that, like, I don't know if he was insinuating this, but, you know, it's like sometimes you think, well, maybe that's leading to more injuries. Maybe they should, like, for kids, don't they say for young kids, like, you should just play catch instead of always pitching from a mound and stuff like that? Is there anything to that?
Yeah, I think so. I think if you don't train your body to get to a certain point, it will be treated like glass to where you can never get there. So playing catch is definitely crucial, long toss and the strength of your arm. If you can throw something really far, essentially you're getting stronger. So The wear and tear of trying to throw as hard as you can on a mound is definitely going to be there every time you do it. So you got to somehow strengthen it in different ways than just pitching.
Mike, I read a heartbreaking story about your dad today and how he fell off a roof in Montana building a cabin there in 2013 and paralyzed from the waist down. And I was just struck by how your dad talked about what a good son you are and how caring you've been and that it put things in perspective and that he values who you are as a son more than anything to do with your baseball success and how it also sounds like you don't take baseball as seriously, maybe as a result of how have things changed for you as a result of this?
I think baseball is probably the biggest change besides my father's accident. With not taking it serious, like you mentioned. I mean, I did take it as if it was a life or death thing at times. I mean, it wasn't drastic to where I was going and trying to hit a pillow, but I did learn from this accident quite a few things, and it opened my eyes to life. I mean, it opened my eyes to realizing that if I do really bad, it doesn't matter. I mean, it's gotten me to where I am today.
Has that accident, has it deepened your relationship with your dad, do you think?
Yes, I think it has. Before, we had a great relationship, but we didn't spend the most time just because baseball separated, and then he was building houses. So the time wasn't necessarily, but I think the time got brought closer for us with this accident, yeah.
That's heartbreaking to hear, but
yeah,
having that connection together still is one of the, that's pretty inspiring to hear.
Yeah. I mean, if I'm trying to still help him, I mean, I know he's in pain, but it's what he's got to go through right now.
How about off the field, Mike? What kind of things do you like to do? Tell us about your family. You married guy?
Yep.
Kids.
Two kids, Jackson, Scotland, 4 and 2.
Four and two.
Yeah.
Are they the point where, because my kids, by the time they got to where they were able to tell, I was retired by then, but are they able to tell that daddy's a baseball player? Do they look at you on TV?
Yeah, they do. They're starting to recognize it.
That's pretty cool.
My son wants to hit the ball, hit balls all the time, and Scotty just tries to pick me out on TV. She doesn't quite recognize it as much, but
So I was going to ask you what you do in your off time, but apparently
it's kids right now.
Pretty much kids. Yeah.
It was a little bit of golf, a little bit of fishing, a little bit of what baseball players tend to do when they're when they have off days. But now it's family. Yeah.
And I know that you have a dog too.
Yep, dog named Duke, bulldog.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, the reason I know that is because I told my kids last night, I got 14-year-old twins, and I said, hey, talking to Mike Leake tomorrow, what should I ask him? And one of my kids said, ask him about the dog walker, because one of your dog walkers is on their baseball team.
Okay. Yeah. Joey. Our neighbor.
Yeah. So, yeah.
We were out of town, so he had to walk him for the last week and a half.
Yeah. And I don't know if you have the time or not, but I do a podcast about dogs called Bark. You can download that at SouthernSports.com.
Okay.
You might tell your teammates about it, too. Mike, I'm trying
to... What inspired you for Bark?
My boss asked me to do it. He knew I love dogs, and he thought it'd be kind of fun to do a podcast about dogs.
Hey, did you guys see the way that card came out of his sleeve?
Seriously?
No, it came out of a pocket.
Just like a salesman.
I'm 61. I'm trying to retire. I want to go over to Spokane and sit on the end of a dock and drink a beer with my dog and just kind of hang out.
And so his idea was, what I'll be able to do is I'll interview dogs on this podcast and be able to say, like, how do you do?
What are the odds that Mike Leake listens to Bark?
I mean, now that I have a card, I'm definitely going to listen to it.
Yeah.
Like one in a million, maybe.
Yeah,
if I didn't
sure.
get a card, I wouldn't have, probably.
That would be there. Mike, it's really fun to get to know you and watch this team and seeing how you kind of captured the city's hopes and imaginations. It's been a while since we've seen a team. You guys are 20 games above 500. It's got to be a blast to be playing right now. We're really grateful that you came out and joined us this afternoon.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I mean, I hope we can take it further for you and take it to the playoffs. I mean, we're there. I mean, it's just a matter of putting it together for us, for you guys, and for us. Yeah.
It is Danny David Moore here on 710 ESPN KIRO AM. The Professor John Clayton joining us next.